Thank you, Lincoln, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And I'd like to thank CETA for the invitation to speak at this CEO Vision Series. For those of you who are observant, you may notice in the summary there's a slight change between the title on this slide and what is in the summary. And that was because I was first asked to speak in this series in December 2007, and I think it was a couple of months ago now that we submitted the summary, and as some of you may have noticed, the world has changed a little in that time. So I trust you will allow me the license to change the content of my speech and my messages accordingly. Let me start, I guess, with just a summary of what I would like to leave you with today. My message is that amongst all the doom and gloom that is around at the moment, and we have been dealt a set of economic cards that none of us like, that none of us wanted, but within all that, I believe that the current situation we find ourselves in gives us, as business leaders, a truly unique opportunity, and it is an opportunity for change, and it is an opportunity to do some things that were not available to us and not on the table just 12 months ago. I'd like to start by, I guess, stepping back and reminding us of the realities of global integration. IBM has been a company that has been at the forefront of talking about global integration, both its inevitability, quite frankly, and its benefits. And the benefits have clearly been significant. Economically, we've brought countries like India and China into the global stage. Socially, we've allowed people to have a bit of understanding of other cultures and other peoples. And technology, the business that we are in, that I am in, has allowed us all to be better informed, better connected, and either at an individual or at a business level, more efficient. But, there is a but, there has been a series of shocks that I think have reminded us of the realities of the impacts of global integration. The global financial crisis has shown us that a default on a subprime mortgage in small town USA can have an effect on the standard of living of Australian retirees on our coasts. We know that uncontained growth on our planet has the potential for irreparable damage to our environment. And we know that in a post 9/11 and Bali bombing world, security is not an issue that can any longer stop at our boundaries. And in fact, I heard this morning that the subways in New York were locked down overnight as a result of the bombings in Mumbai. We are now connected. We're connected economically, we're connected socially, and of course, we're connected technically. And I believe we actually need radical change in our world to deal with the implications of this. As I said, this is an opportunity for change and a demand for leadership that did not exist just 12 months ago. My argument is something very quiet but very profound is happening to our world. We all know that the world is getting flatter and smaller, and Lincoln and I were talking. I'd say it's getting flatter with some significant bumps and hills still along the way, and we talked about the 11 o'clock and midnight and 1 a.m. phone calls to New York and the difficulties that still exist with language. And we are getting more interconnected, but there is something else that is happening that holds even greater potential, and that is our planet is becoming smarter and in fact has a whole lot more potential to do more. And smartness is not perhaps what you think I mean. It is not the knowledge economy, it is not global skills, and it is not our education system, as important as all those things undoubtedly are. I mean the infusion of intelligence in everything that affects literally the way the world works, in the systems and the processes that enable physical goods to be developed, manufactured, to be bought and sold, the way services are delivered, the way people, money, oil, water, and even electrons move around our world. And of course, how billions of people, all of us, how we work and live. So how exactly is the world going to get smarter? I think this can be summarised into three I's: instrumented, interconnected, and intelligent. Let me start with instrumented. The transistor is the building block of the digital age, much in the way bricks and mortar and steel were the building blocks in the industrial era. And the scale of the digital build-out is phenomenal. By 2010, so we're talking less than 18 months away, there'll be 1 billion with a B, transistors on the planet for every person. For every one of us, there will be 1 billion transistors per human. By the end of this year, there'll be 4 billion mobile phone subscribers. Now, just put that into context. As best we can count, the current world population is about 6.7, 6.8 billion. 4 billion mobile phone subscribers. Within 2 years, there'll be 30 billion, and I forewarn you, I'm going to use lots of big numbers in this speech, but there'll be 30 billion RFID tags in virtually everything that you touch. In our cars, in our supermarket goods, our passports, building materials, and even livestock. There is digital stuff everywhere. And these basic building blocks are now interconnected. We talk about 2 billion people on the internet, and it's growing. And as China and India continue to come into the world, these numbers will just grow incredibly. But it's more than people. Think about 1 trillion interconnected and instrumented things, devices. That is what we have today. And these objects can actually speak to each other. They can communicate with each other. They can be interrogated. And then if you think about that, the downside is think about the amount of potential data available. We've got this proliferation of sensors, actuators, devices out there. They are capable of being interconnected. And think about think of our inboxes, but think about the amount of data that can be made available. And in fact, we at IBM, our researchers believe that by 2010, the amount of codified data in the world will double every 11 hours. But this data can actually be turned into something, information, and it can be turned into intelligence. And this will be achieved by giving us all access, ready access, to powerful supercomputing. IBM, in our research labs this year, we developed a supercomputer that can calculate 1 trillion calculations per second. And this type of computing power was once only available to research scientists and to large institutions, and it is now being brought into the mainstream, available literally to all of us. I gave a speech recently in Melbourne at the Millennium Development Summit, and there are villages in Africa without reliable supplies of electricity that are actually accessing supercomputing. It's accessible over the internet, and it's accessible via a phenomenon that we in the IT industry called cloud computing. But think of the internet. You don't know where it is, you don't know who's providing it, you just know it works. And supercomputing delivered that way is coming. Now, I want to bring it down to us a little. Think of your own companies. Every business represented in this room has built out your digital infrastructure. You've done it for your own, typically single-use purpose. Car manufacturers put chips in their vehicles for maintenance reasons. So you could roll your car into a maintenance bay, they could plug it in, and without having to guess, they'd actually see what had happened to your vehicle. Retailers put RFID tags in product packaging, so that they could monitor stock levels on their own shelves. Builders have put sensors in pipes so so that when they lay those pipes, they can then identify if there's a breakage later on rather than have to dig in hope. And as a result of all of us doing this for our own single purpose, I think we've stumbled upon a new age of digital awareness that, in fact, in truth, none of us probably envisaged. Holden put technology in the cars for maintenance, but that technology will now allow your car to be part of a much larger intelligent transport system. Woolworths put the RFID tags in product packaging so they can monitor their shelves, but it actually allows that to become part of a much larger intelligent supply chain. Latent contractors put chips in pipes, originally for maintenance, but it now allows those pipes to become part of a much more serious network of intelligent water systems. So today, almost anything that you can think of has the potential to become digitally aware. A car, a road, a building, a city, your organisation has the ability within it today, the potential to become smart. So you might ask yourselves, sounds good, why would we want our companies to come on board? I believe there are three reasons. We can, we must, and we want to. Let me start with because we can. I've covered this, the technology's there. We can because it's there. It's affordable and available. Because we must comes to one of the comments that was made by Suzanne. I think we must for financial imperatives. The global financial crisis has demanded that we take a harder look at our businesses, how we have to make our companies more efficient and more flexible. You know, we use the word crisis a lot in the world at the moment. We talk about the banking crisis and the financial crisis and the credit crisis. And I think at times like this of such turmoil, it's interesting to look to the Chinese for wisdom. And the Chinese word for crisis is actually made up of two symbols. The symbol for threat and equally the symbol for opportunity. And we have an opportunity. All of the sacred cows in our organisation, we all have them. We have all had them. Things that couldn't be touched, couldn't be considered, too hard, do it later. All the sacred cows are now on the table. They can be challenged, they can be changed. In my discussions, and this is not intended to be an ad for IBM at all, but in my discussions with clients, things have changed in 6 months. We go to clients and talk about consolidating their IT infrastructure. You've got stuff everywhere. You've got data centers everywhere. You've got servers everywhere. 6 months ago, a significant minority would say, don't want to do it. It's too risky. Don't need to. Revenue's growing. Profits are growing. 6 months ago, we go to people and talk about outsourcing. Many of you here outsource services. And the clients would say, too disruptive. Don't need to do it. They're now coming to us saying, talk to us about taking cost out of our business. Offshoring, business we're in, often controversial. Companies are saying, too hard to touch, we'll get our fingers burnt, and now coming to us saying, we need to find solutions to the skills gaps we face. And then finally, on the right of the chart you see, is we want to. Because in spite of the here and now, in spite of the global financial crisis, our world still has and will remain to have higher order issues that we must address. Issues like climate change and the environment, issues like poverty and lifting global living standards. So again, I will talk at a higher level here as a vision, but I ask you to bring this back to your organisations. Whatever barriers existed to change that you used to face, whoever used to tell you you can't do it, we don't want to do it, take this opportunity because I believe now everything is on the table. Let me build the case for change some more. The global financial crisis was unquestionably driven by the time-old features of greed and fear. But it could be argued that smarter systems could have helped us. Would people have invested differently if they'd known about these ever complex packaged debt products that were being creatively produced? Would they have known and would they have invested the same if they'd understood that rather than spreading the risk, as we were all being told, it was actually amplifying the risk? It's an information issue. You ask yourself, is our current system of country-based regulators and country-based central banks effective in the realities of today's interconnected global financial world? On the second line, we talk a lot about finding new sources of electricity, clean coal versus nuclear versus power versus wind versus geothermal. But what we don't talk about, conveniently, is that according to the US Department of Energy, as much as 70% of the electricity that we produce is actually just lost on the grid, lost due to inefficiencies. Now, imagine we don't see that. So it's okay. We burn the coal, which is the primary source of electricity in Australia, to make the electricity. If it was water running down the street out of our dams, people would protest. It's electricity. We don't see it, so it doesn't matter. In Australia, the costs of freight congestion alone are today $13 billion a year. Now, kind of put that in perspective. We're talking about spending $5 billion on a much-needed national broadband network. We lose $13 billion a year on freight inefficiencies. That will grow to $30 billion a year by 2015, according to a study by the Business Council. The length of congested roads, the traffic jams that we all sit in, will treble within the next 20 years. Our ports are cluttered with 700,000 empty containers each year. Our trucks leave the container ports 30% empty. These are inefficiencies and systems issues. Retail industries worldwide lose $40 billion per annum due to global supply chain inefficiencies. Back home, the Murray-Goulburn irrigation system, driest continent in the world, we waste more water per annum from that river than the whole of the university, the whole of Melbourne uses annually. And we talk, and I undoubtedly offend some people here in this, but I will anyway. We talk about our healthcare system. It's not a system. A system implies something happens at one point and there's a shift and something actually happens on the other. Our healthcare is a series of providers. And we believe within a few years, 30% of the data, and I've told you how fast data will grow in the world, 30% of the data will actually be medical records. 30% of the data in the planet will be medical records. So how are we going to store, manage, and use that information to improve healthcare outcomes? And by the way, my industry is not exempt. The average data centre that powers all of our companies, airline reservation systems, banking systems, billing systems, the average data centre in the IT industry has 10 to 20% utilisation. And if we could fix that, the amount of power saved globally would actually be equivalent to the amount of power the country of Australia uses. So there's my view of the problem statement. What is the answer? I think we've got an opportunity. We've got all this data out there today coming from all of these trillions of sources that I've talked about, the proliferation of devices. And we now have this computing power available to us to sit above it. And I believe there is an opportunity for all of us to create smart systems. And this is actually not visionary, although I'm at the CEO Vision Series. This is actually not visionary. It's possible. And it's already happening right here and now here in Australia. And I'll give you some examples. With smart water systems, IBM is working with the University of Melbourne on the Murray River. There's 1,000 gigalitres of water taken out of that river system a year and just wasted. And it's taken because, by and large, the way it's done is best guess. Farmer stands there, floods his paddock, and says, that looks about right. So we're working with the university. We're putting sensors in soil that measure soil moisture. We're putting sensors that can measure plant growth. They are connected to little mobile devices that feed back into a supercomputer. And using that information, we can actually analyse this data. And rather than being, that feels like, it looks like, maybe it's enough, we can direct water exactly where, when, and how much is needed, saving as much water as the city of Melbourne uses. With smart traffic systems, we're working with the Queensland Motorways to introduce a smart roadway. Initially, it'll be cash-free tolling, something we all are aware of and not all that exciting, but that's just a start, because we will expand it to make that technology available so there is traffic prediction and reduce travel times across southeast Queensland. Think about the way we get advice today on traffic situations. Typically, by the time you hear them on the radio, it's over. Or by the time you see them on the neon sign on the freeway, you're stuck in them. We could use information. Smart electricity grids. We're working with Country Energy out in Bathurst to build an intelligent grid with smart metering and in-home monitoring. This is a network that self-heals. You don't lose the 70% of electricity. If something breaks, it's got the ability to fix itself, to self-heal. And we can provide consumers with information. In parts of the world where you're able to provide consumers with real information, consumption has dropped by 25%. So we envisage a world with smart meters in homes where you may wish to make a decision as a household to do the right thing by the environment, and you may say, we will aim to use 100 units of electricity a week. And you get a text message, much like you do with broadband usage today. You get a message to say you've used 90% of it. You can decide what to do with that information. We envisage a world where there is intelligence in the network that says, at my home, power consumption normally dips at about 8 o'clock when everybody leaves. And today at 10 o'clock, power consumption is still at normal levels, and send you a text if you opt to do that. Glenn, you probably left something on. And the ability to get onto the internet, look at your house, and turn it off. This is not science fiction. The head of our local Australian Development Lab actually has this available and showed some of us at a lunch on Thursday last week. And smart healthcare. I've already talked about the fact that we don't have a healthcare system. But there are some good things happening. You know, if you think about it, one mammogram can save one woman's life. Valuable extraordinarily. 1.5 million mammograms brought together can actually help researchers analyse, review, and provide preventative strategies and cures. And in fact, the National Digital Medical Archive in the US is doing that today. Every woman that gets a mammogram in the US, it goes into a digital archive, and that is accessible by researchers. So delivering on the undertakings here, or the opportunities here, is enormous. And in fact, one of the figures I saw that, to fix the world's water, electricity and transport systems will cost $40 trillion, which kind of puts $700 billion or $10 billion economic rescue packages into perspective. But there is potential to make an incredible difference to our economy, our countries, and the health of our planet. So let me conclude by coming back to this period of crisis and what I think it really means for us and for our companies. As leaders, we are really in an extraordinary situation. People want change now, and our current circumstances demand it. We had over 14 years, of unbroken economic growth. We were all pretty comfortable. Things were pretty good. And it's looking very different now. But, this moment and this opportunity won't last forever. And, you know, I have lived through a number, I lived through the dot-com crash in the IT industry, I've lived through a number of recessions. We never come out of the other side of a period like this saying, I wish we hadn't have been so bold. I wish we hadn't have been so ambitious. I wish we hadn't have. We always come out the opposite. We look back and say, what a great chance that was to change all these things that we otherwise couldn't. So I think we all need to ask ourselves, what will we do? What will you do? I don't know all of the businesses you're involved in, but what will you do to seize this moment? And I think as a, you know, one place to always look is to history. And I think we can learn from the 1932 Great Depression, where President Roosevelt built out the American highway systems, the American electricity systems, the American dam systems. He did it to keep Americans in jobs at the time. But in fact, by doing so, set the United States up for 50 years of economic growth and prosperity. And I think that's how we need to think. How do we set our companies in Australia up? What can we do to set ourselves up in this downturn for future prosperity? And one of the challenges, and I face this every day of the week, my IBM colleagues will understand this, is we need to look beyond the next week and the next quarter. You know, again, I mentioned the Chinese quote before on the symbol for crisis, but I think the Chinese are always good people to look towards in these times of turmoil as sources of wisdom. And I think this is a great quote. In the 1950s, Chairman Mao was asked about the impact of the 1789 French Revolution. So the 1789 French Revolution, he was asked his view of it in the 1950s. And Chairman Mao replied, I actually think it's too early to tell. The most important benefits of what we set in motion now may not be felt next quarter, next year, but history will remember the courage and vision of the leaders who made the call to make Australia a smarter place. And if we start investing in a smart Australia now, and I've, you know, many of you here will be involved in similar projects. I've just given you an example of some that IBM are in. We can set Australia up for prosperity into the future. We've got two options. We can bury our head in the sand and say, I wish this wasn't happening. I hope I survive when it's all over. I hope my company is still around. I hope I still have a job. Or we can seize the opportunity that has been presented to us for reasons we don't like. And I think the time is right, because as I said in an earlier chart, I think we can because of the technology capability. I think we must because of the financial crisis, and I think we want to because there are higher order issues that our world needs to address. So thank you very much.